Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Zig Smith and I am joined today by...
I am Sebastian.
And I am Heather.
Now, Heather is a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for joining us. We've not seen you since ye old episode of Horny with Heather,
which
is back in the day.
Wow. I think we've had special guest episodes with you before, though.
Possibly. My grad school career has kept me a little bit busy because I decided to turn my side passion of talking about sex into an actual career.
Ooh, la la.
Yes.
So, we have a great topic today, and it is very serious, and I really hope that folks take the time to listen. We did an interview with a lady who in the early 80s set up one of the first phone lines, and it was Joanne Law, who was
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure the first person that set up a phone line was actually Nikola Tesla, if you're talking about Canada.
No. Crisis phone line. For trans people. I mean, Joanne Law is probably certainly one of the first. Mm-hmm. And we did a quick interview with her. I say quick, it's about 15
minutes. Would you call
minutes.
Her the Tesla of the trans community?
She is certainly a formidable force. And she really has pioneered a lot of trans advocacy.
Absolutely. And I have to say that one of my first connections to the trans community was through her.
Mm-hmm.
And... the way that she spoke to me and the way that she offered so much support, I have so much respect for her because it was not just a, well, you guys could have had more trans representation, because it was a case where I had spoken at a city hall event and that there was no trans representation there, which was probably wrong and short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, well, it's not just this year, but this is also a pattern of events. And I said, okay, well, what can I as a non-trans person do? And she said, let me give you all the resources. And she was very, very good about, like, here are some pamphlets you can have in your school. Here are some resources. Here's everything. And I loved it because it was both... I'm wrong, but also, how can I make it right?
This is both a Joanne Law thing, but also a crisis phone line thing.
Absolutely.
In the sense that Joanne Law is very action-oriented, and this is something that crisis phone lines are all about. You want change in the community, you want to improve things, you want to make things different or better, or you want to shift focus in some way. Getting into something that's tangible and real and action-oriented, which has measurable results, this is a very big deal. This actually, I wouldn't say this defines her as a person, but this kind of defines her somewhat as a person.
Let's hear her speak about it in her own words.
All right, let's do it.
And we'll be back just after the interviews. Listen to what she has to say. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal interview. Thank you. Hello, this is Luke Smith from Can Queer, home of Canada's Queer Media, and I am with one of the LGBT community's biggest shining stars, a longtime advocate. You've won so many awards. You presented to the UN. The incredible Joanne Law. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very, very fine. Thank you, Luke. I had the opportunity to go to New York City, and I'm sponsored by somebody else as the only transgender Canadian and speaker delegate at a World Pride conference.
Wow. Phenomenal.
And I'm sitting there, what am I doing? You know? And I must have, like, you know, scratched a few backs to get there. But when I was in New York City, I had a chance to take the tour bus. I was in the conference for the whole week. And if you're going to be a VIP, they got to, you know, you still have to attend other conferences.
Yeah.
So anyways, I took the tour bus. And I almost got to Stonewall.
Oh, really?
But they wouldn't let me off the bus.
Oh.
So far away and yet so close, you know?
Absolutely. And, of course, the historical significance of Stonewall is phenomenal.
Well, right now it's heritage.
It is. It is a heritage
site. It's a heritage site now.
Yeah. But we're going to talk a little bit about history here in terms of...
back a long time ago.
A little while ago, you set up a trans crisis line.
Yes.
When did that happen?
I guess it all started. I was going to a conference down in, where is it, Pennsylvania, called Paradise in the Poconos. And the organizer named Joanne Roberts. And I was talking to her because she was a leader back in the States and she used to put out a magazine. So I started talking to her about what was going on and how should we promote the trans community up in Ottawa. She says, got to put your name on something. So I had business cards printed up with my name on it. So people could phone the crisis line and they would get somebody. And yes, I did answer the phone line when it rang, except after midnight. I was sleeping back then.
That's bad.
But no, I answered the crisis line for almost 20 years.
Wow, that is phenomenal.
And you know, you listen to people at the other end and they're hurting. They're looking for resources. They don't want to get beat up. And when you're listening to these people, you know within 5 minutes if they're real or not. Or you listen for 5 minutes and you can tell whether they're, you know, ejaculating at the other end of the line because they're talking to a tranny here. I'll use the word tranny, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. In the historical context of what we're talking about, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I'm still tranny. But I would answer crisis. I remember this one call I got from Bangladesh, and I'm listening to the phone, and I'm hearing like a click as it goes through the different phone centers across the ocean and through Britain and everything else.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And it took about maybe 15 seconds for me to get the person in Bangladesh.
Wow.
This person was looking to get surgery in Montreal.
Wow, that's a long way to go.
Yes.
Sure.
And we talked a bit, and I said, look, you got to get your visa card first.
Yeah.
Before you come into Canada. We talked a little bit, but he wasn't happy with what I was going to say.
Oh.
But I would get calls from California. I'd get calls from Mexico. I'd get calls from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Calls from around the world. Well, there was other support groups out there.
Yeah.
But I, you know, because I was coming out and I was with the police liaison committee and I was dealing with a whole bunch of stuff, and I knew what I was, I knew what I wanted to do, and that's when I basically got on my little soapbox and started to preach what I practiced.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I got involved. Mm-hmm. And the only way to learn things is to get involved and talk to people.
I think that's a really important lesson. I think for any folks listening, or certainly of my age demographic and maybe a bit younger, you know, being involved, getting onto the front lines, you know, there's that idea of doing your time in the community. And I think that really, it gives you experiences which are truly invaluable. You know, what are some of the... out of those 20 years that you were doing the phone line, are there any calls that really jump out at you in terms of...
I think they all stuck out because people were crying for help, for support, for where do I go for surgery, where do I go for hormones, what do I do this, what do I do for that? And the only place was in either in Montreal or in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one or two in the States, people doing for surgery, but the thing is that it wasn't publicized.
Yeah.
And when you get involved, I use the expression, you get involved with the movers and the shakers.
Yeah.
The people who change policy, the people who make policy work. Right? And you know, like you go into a room and, how you doing, Joanne? And it's just wonderful because they know you. You don't know them, but they know you because you've stood up to the system.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're talking, do you know when the phone line started, what year it started?
Oh, it was in the 80s.
But even then, you know, in the 80s, in Ottawa, we had the murder of Alain Brousseau in 1991, or in 89, I think it was.
Alain Brousseau was 88, 89, yes. Thrown off the Interprovincial Bridge.
Absolutely, you know, gay men, you know, rolled and murdered in the streets of Ottawa in the 80s. And in that context, you know, these people must have been truly terrified, because only now is being trans even remotely accepted.
Well, it's still not accepted. You go down to the what's that? There's two states on the east side of the United States that will not
North
let
Carolina.
North Carolina will not let transgender people deal with their issue.
Yeah.
You know, deal with the sign on the door that's on your birth certificate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the United States is certainly
it's different.
Struggling.
Yeah.
You know, how have you seen? So, how has the change in the politics in Canada kind of been reflected in the phone calls you get? Because things were slowly, in the early 2000s, we saw marriage legalized and so on.
Yep.
You know, did that change the nature of the phone calls?
No, because I was still getting the same calls, the same help. I need help. Mm-hmm. Where do I go for help? And I would have a list of places around North America that, so-and-so hospital or so-and-so campus, mm-hmm. community campus or a university campus where there was a pride center.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get that information? Like, how did
just
you...
listening to people and writing my own. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I was from California, it's, you know, the UCLA.
Yeah.
Well, here's the center at the UCLA where you can go for help. Or here's another campus in the middle of Florida and you could get help there. Or even, not maybe help, but maybe just, here's a phone number.
Yeah, point you in the right direction.
You know, instead of calling around forever and ever and ever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it sounds like you were almost the Google of trans resources.
Before Google.
Before Google, absolutely.
Before Twitter and all the other ones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's truly phenomenal, though, because we know right now that, you know, the biggest killer of the trans folks is isolation.
It's, major. It's suicide. Well, same in the gay and lesbian community.
Absolutely, but so much more so for trans folks.
Yeah, but the gay and lesbian community did this 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're just 20 years behind.
Yeah.
We don't have doctors. We don't have counselors. We don't have people to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the kids that are getting help now, the ones from, you know, 12 to 25.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are getting help. When you get outside that 25 age time zone, where do I go?
It's a good thing. It means the next generation isn't going to suffer too much of the same fate.
Oh, no.
But you're right. It's at the cost of older folks.
Yeah.
You know, what happened? Whatever did happen to the phone line?
They had a meeting.
And by the way, just for the sake of the
Jenny Mosaic.
So Jenny Mosaic is one of Canada's oldest.
It's one of Canada's oldest. We opened up our door in 1988.
And that's a trans equality group, essentially?
No, we were strictly a cross-dressing social support group.
Cross-dressing social support group. Wow.
That was on the original cards.
That's on the card. Wow.
It was on the card, but that's what it was like back then. Absolutely, there were transgender, transsexual. Were new words that were not, but everybody knew what a crossdresser was.
Absolutely. I think for the sake of our audience here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain what those words mean now. And maybe you can explain what they used to mean back in the day. And just to show kind of like how language has developed, just so that everyone's on the same page.
Remember we were on years ago and you said bring the word transgender?
Yeah.
And I brought four volumes.
Of what it means? Yeah, I remember that. So that's kind of how people understand it now. Everyone's familiar with like RuPaul and drag. Well, that's wearing the opposite clothing.
Now it's Caitlyn
for
Jenner.
Entertainment.
Now it's Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner. See, that's transgender. Actually, that goes down again. Transgender is, you know, betraying the opposite gender. But what happens when you get there on the other end? Are you no longer trans? Like,
I've always asked people after you have surgery, are you trans? Are you now female or are you male?
Are you post-trans? Is that a new...
Well, we haven't seen that word yet. It's coming. I'm sure it's coming.
I'm going to coin it.
Okay. But what happens is the young kids, they've got 15 different pronouns for who they are now.
Yeah. One for every day of the week.
One for every day of the week. And I go to the group sessions and I just want to see what's going on within the community. Just listen. But I just find that the new kids, they don't care.
I think you're absolutely right. There was definitely a time in the early 2000s, the 20 teens, when people were going by so many different types of gender pronouns. But now what we're seeing is, and you can see this in big major studies across the states, is that people are starting to just give up. They're like, you know what? I'm not like super straight and cis and all that jazz.
Yes.
I'm something else. I don't have time in the day to tell you what it is.
Isn't there a professor at York University who stood up and says, I don't like the word transgender?
There was, at University of Toronto. His point was, and it was controversial.
The pronouns.
He said, I'm not going to use the pronoun you prefer because I don't want to give you that false sense of security so that when you leave and you'll actually get mispronounced.
Mispronounced.
Which I think... I can see his thinking, but I think, you know, if you're paying him $7,000 a year, he can say, he can call me whatever I want him to call me, you know what I mean?
but the pronouns are changing so fast. Back then, it was maybe four, like I said, when I lecture, cross-dressing, transvestite, transsexual, you know, like maybe four or five that I'll use, because those are the words that everybody knows.
Yeah. Well, of that demographic.
In your audience, everybody knows those words.
Yeah. Right now...
And even on TV, they call it transvestite.
Not so much anymore. Since the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
No, they still do. I mean, you know, saying what transvestite, you know? Like, oh my God, you know?
I think we've seen your eyes change. Pick up. We've seen a change now with the conversations around Bill C-16 and so on.
Maybe I'll dead before that goes through.
It might be going through by the end.
It got postponed. It got pushed
again. Oh my! It's at the Senate at the moment.
It stuck there.
But it's at the Senate, for folks listening. It's at the Senate committee hearing stage. And it's the conservative senators, like, stonewalling it. It'll be interesting.
And the thing is, with the Senate, it's half the Senate is the new people.
Yeah.
And they don't know what the issues are.
They seem positive in terms of
it. Everything seems positive until they have to vote on it.
So I'm going to bring it back to the phone line now.
Yes, it was fun.
The phone line?
Yes. Believe it or not, I would answer it at 10 o'clock at night, and I knew it wasn't a half-hour conversation. Mm. It was maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours in the conversation.
Wow.
People are crying, and you know, help, what do I do? And you'd give them as much resources as you could.
Yeah.
But after a while, you listen, like I said, you listen to these people, and they're crying for help, and there isn't any, and that's one of the major issues.
Mm-hmm. So I do work with the Ottawa Men's Refuge.
Yes.
And we're looking at male victims being with partner violence.
Yes.
And it's very much the same kind of situation.
Yes.
If you're being beaten up by a male spouse, if you're male and you're being beaten up by a male spouse, you can go to the homeless shelter. That's your only option. And it's just there are so few alternatives. So, I mean, I can see a bit of where you're coming from. But for trans folks in the 80s, there must have been nothing at all.
You got beat up. Well, you went to the Royal Ottawa, and they'd throw the key away.
Because it was in the DSM for the General Diagnostics Manual, where it was considered a mental
disease. It's still there.
I think it's there for political reasons.
Because there are trans people who need need the support or need the access.
So for folks listening,
the DSM 4 and 5.
Yeah.
The Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Absolutely, and the reason why it's very controversial because it says essentially
it is. Everybody's got a problem.
It says on one page, all trans people are mentally ill.
I'm mentally ill. Can't you tell? I'm also dysfunctional.
You're a high-functioning, dysfunctional person, that's for sure. But it's controversial because it implies that everybody who's trans is mentally ill. And that's an issue. But at the same time, it does open the door for access to surgeries and hormone therapy. So it's a double-edged sword, you know?
Well, right now, in Toronto, I think there's line up at least 6 or 8 months just to go down
wait list
to go down to Toronto to the Clark Institute.
Yeah.
It's not the Clark anymore. It used to be the Clark. Now it's the Sherbourne Clinic.
All right, yes. And there is the one in Montreal.
That's the only for surgery.
Oh, really?
That's strictly surgery. That's not for counseling.
I think there's a hormone therapy place here in Ottawa as well.
There could be. But the one in Montreal is strictly surgery. Mm-hmm. Sex reassignment surgery.
The phone line went for about 20 years.
20 years.
Which is, how did you find
the strength? I dedicated myself.
How did you find the strength to keep answering the phone?
I still wanted to stand up and help another transgender person to deal with who they are and what they mean. I had already gone through the crap.
Yeah.
You know, divorce, losing my job. What else can I, living on welfare for 10 years and soup kitchens for 10 years, which I did. Where else can I go? So I got, the phone was there, and it was, if I can help someone deal with another access to the system, even if it was just a counselor that you could deal with, or someone you could talk to.
They say now that they reckon therapists need therapists.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you go to talk about the phone calls that you were getting?
I didn't. It was just self-learning.
My gosh. I mean, in terms of because that must have been so much pressure and so much.
I don't know if it was pressure. I don't know if it was pressure, Luke. It was just after I lost everything, I says I got on my soapbox and started to deal with who I was, what I was, and issues that I faced.
How many trans folks do you reckon you've helped?
Oh, thousands. Mm-hmm. Over the 20 years, thousands plus people here locally.
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of let folks know that. We're talking people in truly desperate situations.
Awesome, ready for suicide.
And I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was about to say that, trans folks, massively disproportionate suicide rate.
Yes.
You may well have been, the saving grace for lots of people.
You talk to the people in, the people that I've met, who say, wow, right on, Joanne, just do it. The young one named Charlie.
Yes.
The young, 12.
There's a young early teen advocate in Ottawa by Charlie, and I forget their last name. Yeah.
That's the name Charlie. Yeah. It was a trans girl.
Yes.
she's got help through the CHEO.
Yep.
But where does Charlie go when she turns 25?
Well, hopefully by the time Charlie gets to 25, things would have improved.
I don't think so. Even with the bill getting passed, how many trans people are going to come out? Mm-hmm. The same as the gay community when after you got your human rights in the marches.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to come out as a gay person?
It's still a conversation that happens now. It's certainly...
It's a major conversation piece of what's going on. Being involved to the way I was, I mean, I was with three or four different organizations. I got there with, you know, with not CHEO, but Youth Services Bureau 25 years ago. I was there at the table. Mm-hmm. All the different shelters, all the names of people who ran the shelters, I sat at the table with them as a transgendered individual and said, someday you're going to need me. I opened the door so that, the word transgender. When I go to the YSB Youth Services Bureau, they won't let me in because I'm an adult. Because nobody knows me in there. Maybe Brenda Lard knows me in there, but that's about it. But nobody knows.
I think that's part of the thing. I think what we need to, what we do with the CanQueer, we try and always not only just say, but also empower, you know, the folks that really paved the way, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you look at the Black Rights Movement with Martin Luther King, all of these legendary
names. And it goes back every day.
All day. I mean,
it never disappears.
A lot of them have died.
Oh, yeah.
But in the queer community, these advocates, well, many of them are dead. Like, a lot of them are still alive, kicking, you know.
The Seniors Pride Network.
I mean, if you look at who is actually there, and you look at our seniors in our community, these are the people who really
built
the community.
Yes.
And we need to take better care of that. Now you're no longer doing the phone line. Who do they call?
Nobody. It's on a computer.
So there's email resources and help.
There's email resources, mm-hmm. and somebody answers an email. To me, looking at a screen mm-hmm. with a bunch of words doesn't mean a damn thing to me. I want to hear a voice. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the what is the word I'm trying to think of? The energy.
Yeah.
Or the loss.
Yeah.
Behind the voice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, after you've done this for, you know, 2 or 3 years, you get to know whether this person's real or not.
Yeah.
They're looking for resources. They're looking for help because mm-hmm. you can hear it in their voice. Help, 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 you know?
We'll be doing an interview in just a few moments with the Ottawa Distress Center, looking at how they handle those calls
major.
Now.
Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthdays.
Yeah.
Major.
They are a phenomenal resource. And of course, don't forget that if you're listening to this anywhere in the world, most Western states and most Western cities do have local crisis lines that...
They all do. Even the kids line now out of Toronto, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, it's funding to keep these lines open.
Very important.
It's the volunteers.
Yeah.
If you don't have volunteers, I'm sorry, your organization's going to go kaput.
So what would you say to inspire people to step up and volunteer on a phone line?
It's hard. Because nobody wants to be...
It's not encouraging.
No, there's... nobody wants to commit themselves anymore. Mm.
Yeah.
Back then, we were starting organizations. We were building communities. We were getting things. Well, like, now it's all done. Why do we need this organization? Why do we need that help? Why do we need this? And it's all being done now. So, we're losing history. And
so how do we convince somebody to step up, skill up, and stick to it?
How far out of the closet do they want to come?
It's and I think that's it. It takes a lot of bravery.
I use the expression, takes balls to do this. Even like with the new up-and-coming Caitlyn Jenner, mm-hmm. I'll use her as an expression. She's disappeared again. She came out, you know, I'm an athlete. I was in Montreal. I got, you know, the triathlon and everything else. She's now had her surgery because mm-hmm. people were complaining about, you weren't really a real woman. She's gone back into her closet now.
I think she's actually complaining about the Trump administration. No, she's complaining about Republicans.
Well, I can complain about the Trudeau, you know. Where's my human rights?
Unfortunately, we don't have time for that at the moment.
That's another story.
Absolutely. That's Bill C-16. We'll be back just after this. Thank you so much for joining
us. Oh, I love this. We're going to do this again.
Absolutely. Thank you. So for now.
Thank you, Luke. Ooh, love, you got me so mad. I give you all of my loving. Best that you've ever had.
This is Luke Smith with Karen Queer, Home of Canada's Queer Emerging, and I'm with Brianna from the Ottawa Distress Centre. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
So we are talking today about crisis lines. Now, you know, straight off the bat, how important do you believe crisis lines are?
Oh, I believe they're so important. Our line is 24/7, so this means that while everybody may or may not have a professional providing them support in their life, may or may not have family members or friends around, we're there. We're the ones that are there at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning when there's no one else. So I believe that they're really important addition to any other supports that anybody has. Weekends, evenings, when all the doctors and workers go home, we're still there to answer those calls.
Now, we had a great conversation with Joanne Law earlier today, and she was saying that, you know, you get phone calls and you can tell the ones that are fake and there's like a frap frap sound in the background that we're not going to go into. But, you know, you can tell the people calling who are desperate in need for help and that, you know, having someone there to talk to essentially saves lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that something that you see at 2, 3 a.m.?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So a lot of our calls really just focus around isolation and loneliness. And people have stuff going on in their lives that isolate them from the people around them. They don't feel comfortable talking to those people about whatever they're going through, or they don't know how. And talking to somebody on the phone as opposed to face-to-face really leaves them with their anonymity, really.
Yeah.
And our service is completely confidential, so they know that anything they tell us is not going to be shared outside of the distress center, which is really important.
How important is that? You know, how in just from maybe your feel of the situation, how much more are people willing to disclose, being that it's not face-to-face, it's just over the phone?
I think quite a bit more, because it can be, you know, they're not being judged on what they look like or how they're presenting. We can't see them. So they might feel, they might be self-conscious about what they look like or going out in public and thinking people are looking at them, or for people with mental health issues that experience paranoia, that can really be a big part in it. So I think knowing that somebody is there listening to you and you have their full attention, mm-hmm. without the whole, you know, having to meet somewhere and being judged. And you can call from your pajamas in bed if you want to. You can call from the bathroom at work. We're there. So
absolutely.
I think it adds that convenience for people, and also just allows them to be more free to talk.
Now, we talked earlier about the trans crisis line that Joanne was having, which is very kind of issue focused. It's for trans folks. But that was shut down a little while back. But I do believe that, you know, crisis lines in general across the country, not just here in Ottawa, but also in places like Vancouver, Calgary, and Montreal, Toronto, and many other places, and there's a few national crisis lines as well. You know, how important is it that that these crisis lines handle all kinds of calls?
Right, well, we wouldn't be serving our community fully if we picked and choose what kinds of calls we answered, right? And that would just leave people more isolated. We're lucky in Ottawa, we have so many resources for people to turn to, but sometimes it's hard for people to know which one is the right one for them. And so we act as kind of a catch-all where anybody can call us with any issue. Our volunteers are extensively trained before they get on the phones and all kinds of things. And while we may not know everything that any caller is ever going to call us about,
yeah.
we certainly have a huge resource database that then we can send people to maybe a trans-specific a resource that where they deal with specific issues or something like that.
Absolutely. What's that look like in terms of, we were talking a little earlier just before the interview about, you know, how the Ottawa Distress Centre captures those information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of the Child Helpline in the UK.
No, I'm not.
It's run by the National Society for the Prevention Against Cruelty to Children.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is amazing about this helpline is that they record absolutely every single detail about every single call. But I mean, it's you know, you're made anonymous through the volume of them. It's the entire country, all of them. But what the reason why I bring this up is because they're able to identify trends. They're able to identify, you know, folks who are experiencing X tend to experience Y or Z, you know.
Okay.
Is, you know, how many folks do you reckon who call the Ottawa Distress Centre are talking about sexuality, for example?
Well, I just took a look at our 2016 stats. So in 2016, we took just a few over 50,000 calls. and about 2.5% of them mention sexuality in some part of their call. That could be the caller themselves, or it could be a friend or family member that they're concerned about. And then about 450 of those 50,000 calls surrounded gender identity. So we do keep some stats because we have to be accountable to our funders and show that the work that we're doing means something in a quantifiable way. We don't record our calls or keep extensive reports or anything, but we do have a little bit of numbers just to show. And certainly we would be able to see from month to month if there was a spike in a certain issue in relation to something going on in the world or something like that.
That kind of segues very nicely into a conversation about the Netflix TV show 13 Reasons. Now, for folks listening, the 13 Reasons essentially centers around a high school girl who takes her own life. And then sends out 13 videotapes or videotapes with two sides on them to 13 different people with 13 different reasons why she took her life.
Right.
Unfortunately, Netflix did not provide any kind of, at the end of the show, did not provide their crisis lines or, you know, for more information, contact XYZ. So certainly very remiss of Netflix, and in fact, negligent, I would say, of Netflix not to have included that information. Do you see when things happen, and I'm immediately drawn to in Ottawa we had a situation where the councillor's son, Jamie Hubley, sadly took his life. Do you see spikes in calls around these public events where, you know, there's a lot of conversation around, you know, maybe in this case it was suicide?
Yes, we do see spikes. I have heard from our volunteers a few calls surrounding 13 Reasons Why and people's reactions to that. And I think when these things happen and you watch the show, it can trigger a lot of different things. So it can trigger, maybe you were already experiencing suicidal ideation and you see yourself in the main character and you are now feeling like you need to get help but you don't know where to turn before it becomes too late. Or maybe you're a parent and it's triggering thoughts in you that you're worrying about your kid or what your kid might be going through, but you're not quite sure how to bring it up with them. If that's not a conversation that you have around your dinner table, then we're here to take those calls and kind of help you process those emotions that you're going through. Or if you see it in a friend, or you're concerned about anybody, really. When stuff happens close to home, that's what makes us think, you know, it is possible. Yeah. It's really easy to think, you know, this doesn't happen in my city or in my house or in my school or in my work, but unfortunately it does. We take calls from your neighbor, your brother, your coworker, your kids. So when these things happen, it's unfortunately a good opportunity to open the line of communication, and we're certainly here to process those emotions for people and help them with coping skills, healthy coping skills, and also help them open those lines of communications with people in their life that could benefit from
it. Absolutely. And I think you brought up a fantastic point there, where having a phone line to call and having someone who is going to pay attention, someone who's going to listen and hear you out, is absolutely so fundamentally important. But we need to also be aware, and I think it's great that the Ottawa Distress Centre does this, that the next step is tackling that isolation, tackling that lack of communication. Here at CanQueer, we're all about communication and building those connections to, you know, your family, your broader friend base. Finding folks that you can lean on and in your network of support is absolutely so important. Now, in the UK, Childline has moved into taking instant messaging calls, effectively, email calls. Jenna Mosaic, who ran the trans line, now take emails. It's a lot less personal, but for some folks that might be a better option. What's the future for the Ottawa Distress Centre?
So that is definitely something that we're working on. In 2016, we were the recipient of money raised by the Ottawa Police Gala that happened in November, and that money is specifically targeted towards helping us start a text and chat option so that people can go online and chat with us, or even text from their mobiles, and they'll have one of our volunteers on the other end to answer that. So it opens up to a new demographic, I think. Encourages even more people to reach out for help if they're even feeling nervous about making a phone call now. Talking is taken off the table. So I think that will be really great, and I'm actually really excited about when that comes out to kind of see how that unfolds. There are some distress centers in Ontario and in Canada that already have a text and chat function, and they report it being pretty busy. Like, the demand is certainly there, so.
Which is, I mean, it's great to know that there's demand, but I mean, also when it's one of those flip sides where it's great that there is demand, it's awful that there is demand. Certainly quite a challenging situation. So for folks listening to this show, not just in Ottawa, but across Canada, what kind of words of wisdom would you give if they need some kind of help?
I guess just don't be afraid to talk about it. Just reach out to somebody. If there's somebody in your life that you feel comfortable talking to, if you feel comfortable calling us or your local distress line, please do that. Because, you know, I was at a show last night at a high school in Ottawa where they played The Girl in the Mirror. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story, but one of the things that they said was that 80% of people with suicidal ideation were able to be helped when they made the move to reach out for help. And so that is a huge number. And one suicide is too many.
Yeah.
And even if you're not experiencing suicidal thoughts, any thoughts that you're struggling with, like it's only human to feel pain and feel isolated sometimes, and just know that you're not alone in that pain and that somebody is there to listen for you and somebody knows what you're going through.
Now, for us, we know that it's really important to kind of tackle this issue head on. And hopefully this call has inspired some people to step up and step forward.
Mm-hmm.
How important is the role of a volunteer in your organization?
Well, I mean, we couldn't run without our volunteers because they man the lines 24/7. So right now we have over 220 active volunteers running our lines. We're always taking new applications on our website for anybody that thinks they might be interested in doing this kind of work. And I often hear that people want to volunteer, but they feel like maybe they've been through stuff in their life or they don't know how they would respond to some calls that they get. And then some of our seasoned volunteers tell me the training really prepares you. So even if you're thinking it might be a bit of a challenge for you, take the risk, apply, see what happens, because it's a really, really rewarding experience to talk to people and know that you're making a real difference in someone's life that needs you.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that has come up most often in our conversation around crisis lines, that, you know, these people are literally lifesavers. Being there to answer the phone and to pick up the line. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with me. And we'll throw it back to the studio and talk a little bit more about this topic before we head out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back. We're here in the studio. My name is Luke Smith and I'm joined by Sebastian and Heather. You heard the interview with Joanne Law. I really hope, I mean, she is such a phenomenal force. I mean, I said during the interview, she saved thousands of lives over the time. And then between that and the other interview, we had Rhea May and Ulove. Rhea May, of course, came out as bisexual a year ago or so. Phenomenal Canadian artist, and that is one of my favorite songs by her. And then we followed that up for our avid listeners, of course, with the interview we did with Brianna, who is the community outreach coordinator for the Ottawa Distress Centre. Now, I want to pick up one of the conversations that I just had with Brianna and kind of bring that conversation to you two. And that conversation is, and we're going to start off with a bit of a specific example here. We talked briefly about 13 Reasons, the Netflix show. Yes. Are you familiar?
Oh, my God.
I have not watched it myself, but I am familiar.
Have you read the controversy around it, though?
Yes.
So in the UK, and the BBC in particular, if you do anything which touches on any kind of social mental health issue, it's followed by a list of, you know, have you been affected by blah, 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 call blah, 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 blah. But Netflix does not have that. Maybe you can extrapolate.
What's the something blue, the New York crime show? There you go. NYPD Blue and CSI have both had episodes that deal with sexual assault.
Yeah.
Every single time they do it, they give, if you had problems with this episode, please contact the following network or look for resources on this website or something like that. They're very, very good at that. Even on times where they didn't have to, there have been times where they talk about things like, you know, episodes where somebody talked about child abuse from like 30 years ago. And they're like, you know, these are the resources in your area to deal with it. This is how you deal with these things responsibly and maturely.
Yeah. Yeah. So was Netflix irresponsible by not providing access to crisis lines?
Well, it's even worse than that. They consulted with suicide crisis lines about What does it look like? What are the lead up to the event, and what is the actual process of somebody deciding on things? And they were actually looking for a list because they had a vague understanding that there's a historical precedent whenever a movie or a TV show deals with suicide, especially if it becomes popular, like the Virgin Suicides, which was late 2000s.
Yeah.
These things tend to trigger a raft of suicides in the world. And they consulted with various professionals on what that process is, what does it look like, how is it that one suicide can encourage another suicide. And they gave them, the experts gave the producers of the show a list of things to never, ever, ever do while talking about suicide in fictional media.
Yeah.
And they ended up taking that as a checklist of things to do.
Or so it's alleged.
A little bit. Yeah.
We can't prove it on beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, they didn't literally turn it into a checklist, but they did do every single thing they were asked very strongly to avoid.
I want the folks listening to know that, you know, hopefully this conversation that we've had here and that has been had by Brianna and Joanne Law has kind of really shown that there is someone you can call. That if you are feeling, you know, your partner might not be the right person to talk to, your friends might not be the right person to talk to, the person at the end of this phone line is always the right person to talk to, because they're always listening. They're always there. You know, and I think that volunteering on the crisis phone line is unbelievably important. If you have the capacity, the time, the inner strength needed, the fortitude, the training comes provided. But I mean, I think I can't stress enough how important it is to provide that as a resource to your community, or to take advantage of it if you are in a place that needs it.
Absolutely. And I feel like with the mental health system in Canada that if you are not an immediate danger to yourself, it can be very hard to to access services. So when I was
Mental health in Canada is like almost sufficient is the way that I would describe mental health care in Canada.
So when I was a teenager.
Almost sufficient, not almost good. Almost sufficient.
Almost just able to breathe. So when I was a very troubled teenager and I struggled with suicidal ideation and stuff, I was also a very strong and persistent person. And so I would try to get help. And every time I was told sort of, well, you're too able to ask for help, and therefore you're not sick enough for us. And there is this weird gray zone between I am unwell enough to ask for help, but I'm not so unwell that I need to be taken in against my will. And there is this gray zone with some doctors and with being able to access some resources through our health system, which absolutely needs to be fixed. But in the meantime, as we work to fix that system, these helplines, absolutely, you can talk to someone who is not going to say, your case is not serious enough.
It makes me think of when Brianna said, you know, what happens when your counselor goes home for the day? You know, your counselor's gone home for the day. You've just watched an episode of 13 Reasons Why that reminds you of all of the reasons why, you know, that might trigger XYZ in you. You know, what happens then? Netflix isn't going to tell you who to call, because we've already established that's not the case. That's when you look at what happens locally. So for folks listening, if
somehow I trust HBO to
what I feel like is that Netflix would actually be in a better position to offer a helpline, because in cases when there is international audience, that if you're in America you would call sort of one line, and if you're in Canada you would call another, and if you're in Spain you would call another, but Netflix also knows your region. And so I feel like Netflix would be in a better
HBO's
position
a creator,
to be like,
but Netflix is a provider, and so at the end where it says if you have problems, you know, feel free to contact resources, and then you click the blue button and then a list of local resources come up.
They dropped the ball. Let's be serious. They dropped the ball.
I think so. And I don't want to say that it's absolutely horrible for them to try to deal with the subject matter. I don't think that we should be afraid to deal with the subject matter, mm-hmm. but I really wish they would have put just like that little extra thought into being able to bridge the connection between that fictional conversation to real life resources.
Now, our radio show goes out in Wellington, New Zealand. It goes out and it goes out in New Brunswick, Nova Scotia.
Hello, my Kiwis.
Alberta and Ontario. Yes. And, you know, we want you to know that if you just Google, just straight up Google Crisis Line Alberta. Crisis Line New Zealand.
Yeah.
You will find what you're looking for.
You always get a hit, and it's always a good one.
And the people at the end of the line will not say, you're not serious enough, or they will, and they won't say, you know, that your insurance isn't accepted, or they won't say any of those things. They will just listen. Yeah. And sometimes, oh my God, that is all you need, is someone to say, yes, I hear what you're saying. Yes, other people would be upset as well, or I hear you. I might never have been in your shoes, but I feel you.
A so, lot of people know. Who volunteer for distress lines
have been there.
They've been there, or they know someone who's been there, and it's absolutely. It's intimate to them that it's important that they're usually they're self-selecting in the sense that by being an understanding person and by caring about the issue, you volunteer for this kind of thing. So you're going to get people who care.
How important is this to the LGBT community?
Oh, my God.
Phone lines, crisis phone lines.
Oh, in the 80s and 90s, before the community really picked up, as a result of decriminalization and legalization of a whole bunch of issues, the phone lines was how people survived. Some time ago, we actually did an interview with Marion when she mentioned that when she lived in, I cannot remember the community she lived in, but I remember it was southwestern Ontario. It was like an hour away from Sarnia. I can't remember the name of the community. But anyway, so she lived in rural southwestern Ontario. And she said that there were so many people where if it weren't for the phone lines, they would not be living.
Yeah.
Let alone living happily. That there was a lot of people who found the community before it was legal to have a community through the crisis lines, which were largely staffed by volunteers.
Absolutely.
Sorry, of course they were. they were, it was an addendum to the, I think they called them spousal abuse crisis lines at the time. And it was just sort of like, you know, if you're having domestic abuse issues or
X, Y, Z.
If you're queer or you're having a problem with your parents and your youth. And it was just sort of like, you know, they billeted themselves as being this kind of crisis line. And also they did the following 15 things as well. Mm-hmm. And that they knew very tangibly. I don't know if, do you remember this conversation? You're looking at me very blankly right now.
Yeah, no, I do.
Okay. that there were people that they knew on a first name basis because being a small enough community, they might recognize names or somebody might recognize their voice when they're in public and they would actually meet these people face to face and they would get firsthand accounts from people whose lives they saved. So absolutely. Yes. I mean, in the 80s and 90s, and obviously in the 70s when this sort of thing first started up, I think it was way more impactful than it is now where things are a little bit more acceptable and you can go to a community health center or you can go, you know, if you're a student, you can go to a campus counseling if you have benefits. I mean, like, it's still important. But if you're to say, has it ever been important? Then absolutely. It has literally saved hundreds of lives. For
I'm
sure
that I would go as far as to say thousands. And if you, a conversation with Brianna where she mentions, you know, sometimes you want the anonymity. Sometimes you don't want to go and see the counselor right there in front of you and their reactions when you say X, Y, Z. Sometimes that phone line is what you need.
I remember speaking to someone in middle school who had called a sort of a youth crisis line, and she had such a positive experience with the person that she was calling because the person that she was calling had been trained and knew not to interrupt her and knew to affirm what she had said. And she had such a positive experience from it that, you know, she was so willing to call back if she ever needed it. But of course, the the more willing you are to call back, sort of the less you need it. But she would talk about that this positive experience, that in her lowest moments, she could reach out to somebody and somebody knew how to react, that it wasn't a, oh my God, don't kill yourself, or like, oh my God, don't hurt yourself. That it was actually like a, tell me more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a, shut up, you're not supposed to talk about that. Tell me more.
Yeah.
And I would feel really depressed if that situation happened.
Yeah, somebody who is capable of saying, at least from an emotional perspective, yes, that seems like a reasonable response to the situation.
Yeah, I would be very upset as well.
If you see yourself reflected in that, then I implore you, please step up to your local crisis lines and mm-hmm. put in just, you know, a couple of 10 hours a month. Just do something to help and be there. And if anyone listening to this show has been affected by the contents of the show and the conversation regarding crisis lines and the topics involved, we implore you. We'll have some listed on our website, of course, but mm-hmm. we can't list all, being that we're all over the place. But we, you know, just Google it, crisis line, mm-hmm. your province.
And it's not ideal,
but it certainly is.
And of course, if you decide to volunteer, they will usually provide very extensive training and you can find out when someone comes to you and says, you know, I'm thinking about hurting myself, or mm-hmm. I feel so overwhelmed, I don't know what to do. That training can provide you the tools to be able to respond in the most supportive way possible, in a way that actually makes a difference in the life of the person that's talking to you, because sometimes our gut instinct, which is like, oh no, you're fine, is not necessarily the best. And so when you can get that training, then you can know, even in your personal life, how to react to people in a way that's supportive and affirming so positive.
This loops back to our original conversation about being action-oriented, because a lot of these people are like, yes, that is messed up. Let's talk about concrete ways to help you and make yourself feel better. And there is that very strong angle of accepting the fact that the way that you feel is legitimate, even if it's not supported, even if it's not something you should be looking forward to doing, like, it is a legitimate way to feel. All feelings are legitimate,
mm-hmm,
but the actions that come out of it, let's talk about positive actions. Let's talk mm-hmm. about concrete ways of helping you. And there is this very strong angle of being
and there is
directed,
and there is all of that and more, because we know that is all included mm-hmm. in the training provided, mm-hmm. and we implore you, reach out mm-hmm. and if you have been affected, please contact the crisis lines in your area and have somebody to talk to. If you've been affected by this and feel like you want to show the support for these conversations being on your radio, tweet us mm-hmm. At Velvet Studio or Talk Can Queer, and we'd love to have a bit of interaction there. But that sadly is all we have time for. We're playing out with Hurts by The Beautiful Ones, and I chose this one. It's a UK band, but they did a music video looking at anti-gay violence, but it is an incidence of anti-gay violence played backwards. So it's kind of like you start with the end result and then you see the incident unfold in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful videos we've seen on the topic. But that is it. That's all we've got time for. And, feel free to reach out. I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian.
And I've been Heather.
Up your phone, put on your coat, everyone's looking up at you. Push through the crowd into the sound of everyone talking about you. Don't be afraid, honey, one day this will fade. So put on a smile, do it in style, make them all desperate to be you.
Make them all desperate to be you. Make them all desperate to be you.
Don't think twice. Just a phase, you're not to blame for everyone trying to please you. But you're too young to come undone, so don't let them try to deceive you. Don't be ashamed, honey, one day this will fade. So put on your coat, give them a show, and make them all desperate to be you.
Make them all desperate to be you.